And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blast-off. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
About 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on February 7th, 2016. This is program 50, Lisa Wolf. 50.
That's a lot of shows, Carl.
That is. It's one more than yesterday's show. Yesterday was 49. And for those of you who don't know, this is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari, and my co-host is right next to me, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
I guess I'm feeling vivacious.
You are. You are. Yeah. And we play classic radio shows. We're here every Saturday and Sunday evening from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. in the morning. We play six classic radio shows, shows like The Shadow and Jack Benny, Gunsmoke, Dragnet, Boston Blackie, The Whistler. We have all your favorite classic radio shows Saturday and Sunday nights here on the legendary Radio 720 WGN. And tonight, we have three classic radio shows for you. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. We'll have The Black Museum, a good mystery starring Orson Welles. And then a good Western with Luke Slaughter of Tombstone, starring Sam Buffington. All of this is brought to you in part by our sponsor, Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
Same Kind of Different as Me is an upcoming drama about an international art dealer who must befriend a dangerous homeless man in order to save his marriage to this actress who plays his wife.
Okay, this actress. All right, so this actress, if you can name her, you are going to win two tickets to the Chicago Auto Show and also two tickets.
Yes, to see the comedy called Jeeves at Sea playing at First Folio Theater in Oak Brook.
So it's like a double prize if you can name this actress. I'm going to give you a hint. She co-starred with Tom Cruise in 1996 Jerry Maguire.
You had me at hello.
All right, if you know who that is, call us right now, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Win some prizes. We'll find our winner after this break.
This is show 50 of the WGN Radio Theater, which coincides coincidentally with the Super Bowl 50.
Wow.
Big,
I like how you did that,
there.
Lisa.
And we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that iconic movie clip one more time.
You had me at hello.
And we have Karen online from Genoa. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
You must know that line. Who said that line?
That's Renee Zellweger.
It definitely is. And you are a double winner tonight because you have not only won two tickets to the Chicago Auto Show running February 13th through the 21st at McCormick Place, courtesy of Fifth Third Bank, but also a pair of tickets to the Chicago premiere of the comedy Jeeves at Sea, playing through February 28th, presented by First Folio Theater, which is located in Oak Brook. So you can check them out at firstfolio.org for tickets. You are a winner. Thanks so much for listening and calling in, Karen.
Wow, thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Karen. Appreciate it. All right, this is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. Lisa Wolf to my right. We have Mike Costella, our executive producer, right in front of me, making sure that these shows sound great. And, of course, the one and only Dan Long, the best in the business, our producer in the booth there. And all of the buttons that he hits puts the shows on the air.
That's so we don't have to hit any buttons, which is a really good thing because you'd probably mess it up.
I am terrified of technology.
I noticed that.
So we don't want that. And Dan is the golden-toned voice that answers the phone. So when you call in to win, Dan will talk to you. very soothing voice, like Dan Jaffe was just doing on that Cats Pride Matters there.
Will you show us your soothing voice,
yes,
Dan?
Yes, your soothing voice.
I will do my best to soothe.
Nice.
That was very soothing.
That just put me right to sleep. That's how soothing that was. Very nice. Okay, ready for our first classic radio show? We're going to start things off with a comedy because our listeners love comedy.
Yes, and we usually don't start with a comedy, so we're sort of shaking things up a little bit.
Comedy tonight. Okay, so we're going to start things off with Our Miss Brooks. It was a situation comedy series heard on CBS. Began in 1948. Eve Arden starred as ninth grade English teacher Connie Brooks. She worked at Madison High School, and her principal was Osgood Conklin, played by Gail Gordon. Now, you know about Gail Gordon, right?
I sure do.
For years, he was Mr. Mooney on the Lucille Ball series. He was really her foil for all of her television shows. And Richard Crenna was student Walter Denton. Jeff Chandler was biology teacher Philip Boynton, who Miss Brooks had a crush on, big crush. And this show moved to television in 1952, but it started on radio. And we have a broadcast from 1949, November 13th to be exact. It's called A New Mascot for Madison High. It's sponsored by Colgate Toothpaste. Got any Colgate toothpaste, Lisa?
I don't brush my teeth.
Go ahead, try. There's a bathroom over there. Why don't you try a little Colgate toothpaste? I'd really appreciate that.
Yeah, I bet you
it's
would.
It's heard on CBS. Here's part one now of Our Miss Brooks.
Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks, written by Al Lewis. Well, the football season is just about reaching its peak in most of the nation's high schools. But somehow the fever seems to have bypassed Our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School.
Yes, I'm afraid I've always been one of football's more passive fanatics. But as faculty advisor to the cheerleading squad, an honor foisted upon me some months ago, I was invited to a special meeting held in our principal's office during lunch period last Thursday. In addition to Mr. Conklin, those present included his daughter Harriet, Mr. Philip Boynton, our bashful biology teacher, Walter Denton, the manager of the team, and Stretch Snodgrass, star quarterback and captain. Stretch has always been something of a paradox to me. I've never been able to understand how a brain which can retain so many clever football plays can have such difficulty in spelling a word like cat. Be that as it may, Mr. Conklin wasted no time in telling us why we had been summoned.
As you all know, tomorrow is the day we play City High. You also know that I consider Jason Brill, the principal of that institution, my arch rival. What you do not know is that Brill has obtained a small bear cub in honor of the Clay City Cubs, which he intends to trot out between halves. We, too, must be prepared to entertain the spectators with our mascot. It's as simple as that.
Not quite, Mr. Conklin. Our football team has always been known as the Madison Comets. It might be rather difficult to lead a comet out between halves.
Oh, Alex, that's a hot one. Imagine trying to lead a comet.
Let's try... Let's try to be constructive, shall we? I intend to change the name of the football team to fit the mascot we select. I'm open to your suggestions.
Before we make any suggestions, Daddy, where did Mr. Brill get the bear cub you mentioned?
From the circus, Harriet. You know the one in Moore's Meadow which bogged down on its way to winter quarters?
Then maybe we could get something from them. Maybe even a tiger. Boy, the Madison Tigers. I can just picture it. At halftime, we lead this ferocious tiger to the Clay City bench where Mr. Brill is sitting. Can't you just see the expression on Mr. Brill's face?
I'm not going to look down a tiger's throat just for that.
No, I'm afraid a tiger isn't quite original enough, Denton.
Oh, let's see. How about the Madison Monsters?
Yes, we ought to be able to pick up a cheap monster somewhere.
With you as the team's manager, Denton, that name is almost ideal. With that, you've given me an idea. It should be an alliterative name. Now, how about you, Snodgrass? Any ideas on the subject?
Yes, sir. What does alit
What does
What does alliterative mean?
Don't you know either?
Alliterative means when words start with the same initial, like the Clay City Cubs or the Pittsburgh Pirates.
How about the Madison Mustangs, Mr. Conklin? We ought to be able to rent one of those for the game. And maybe Mr. Boynton could ride him around the stadium at halftime.
No, not me. No, if you wanted to borrow my pet frog, McDougal, as mascot.
Not a bad idea. Of course, we'd have to get a rather tiny saddle.
No, wait a minute. Stretch, your father runs a pet shop, doesn't he?
Yes, he does, Mr. Boynton. But we ain't got no animals over there that would be good for what we want them for right now, I don't think.
Where in the world did you acquire that manner of speech, Snodgrass?
I'm in Miss Brooks's English class.
Stop boasting, Stretch, or we may both be back in grammar school soon. What sort of animals do you have in the shop at the present time?
Mostly puppies and birds. Say, I got an idea. My dad got 4 brand new blue jays this morning.
Please, Stretch, Mr. Conklin isn't interested in what your father puts on his corns.
I don't mean blue jay corn plasters, Miss Brooks. I mean real ones. They're awful pretty and they could... No, if they ever flew away, my dad would lambaste the living... He'd be peeved. I know. Maybe I could bring over my turtle as a mascot.
The Madison Mud Turtles. Now, that's sort of alliterative. How big a turtle have you got, Stretch?
He's exactly 3 inches square.
Now, there's a brilliant suggestion. How could the crowd in a football stadium possibly see a 3-inch turtle?
I know. We could paint Madison in huge red letters on his back.
This meeting is getting absolutely nowhere. As usual, the important decisions have to stem from my own creative brain. I will come to a decision by the time school ends and delegate one of you to pick up the animal of my choice. You may all go to lunch now. Dismiss!
Aye, aye, sir.
Where are you going to have lunch today, Miss Brooks? Marty's Malt Shop?
No, Mr. Boynton. I'm going to live dangerously and go to the school cafeteria. It should be much more inspirational.
Inspirational?
Yes. I had some stew there the other day, which I'm sure would have made a wonderful mascot.
Well, school's over, Daddy. Did you think of anything yet?
Yes, Harriet, I have. Taking into consideration the fact that the Board of Education makes no financial provision for team mascots, I've decided we must get something which won't cost too much money to feed.
What did you hit on?
A gopher.
A gopher? But, Daddy...
If it's good enough for Minnesota, it's good enough for us. We'll just capture one this evening in our backyard. Excuse me, Harriet. Principal's office. Osgood Conklin on this end.
Hello, Osgood. This is Martha, dear. Your wife.
I know your title. I conferred it on you. Now, what is it, my dear?
Well, I'm afraid I have some rather distressing news.
Your brother is staying over another day?
No, dear. I broke one of your favorite bookends. I was cleaning it, and it just slipped out of my hands. I don't know how it could...
There have been greater disasters known to man, Martha. We'll simply replace the bookend.
But it was a gift, dear. I don't know where they were purchased, and... Wait a minute. Miss Brooks was admiring them just the other day at tea. She said she saw an identical pair in a curio shop right near her house. Do you think it would be asking too much to have her pick one up for us?
It would be a labor of love for the woman. My teachers adore me, you know.
Yes, dear, I know.
Which bookend was it, Martha? What design?
It was the one with the elephant on it, Osgood. She'll remember it all right.
Then the matter is closed. Think no more of it, my dear. I'll see you in just a little while. Oh, by the way, Martha, I'm rather tired, so when I do come home, I'll take a little nap in the living room. Please see that the squealing urchins with which our neighborhood abounds are shooed as far away from our porch as possible.
I'll try, Osgood. Goodbye, dear.
Goodbye. Now then, Harriet, fetch Miss Brooks at once, if you please.
I can't, Daddy. She's gone home.
The speed with which they depart is always a revelation to me. Well, take this note, child. Attention, Miss Brooks. I want you to purchase at once an elephant bookend of the type you admired so much at our house recently. Now, take that right over to Miss...
Oh, gosh, Daddy, if you're going to send me on any errands, I just can't go. I've got volleyball practice with a team this minute.
But I promised your mother I've got
to
get this...
Well, let me look out in the hall. Maybe somebody's still around. Stretch! Oh, Stretch!
Hi, Harriet. What can I do for you?
You can deliver a note, boy. Do you know where Miss Brooks lives?
Yes, sir, with Mrs. Davis.
Right. Now, take this note right over to her, will you?
Sure, Mr. Conklin. Where does Mrs. Davis live?
The address is 295 Carroll Avenue. Now, be sure she gets that message immediately.
Don't worry about me, Mr. Conklin. When it comes to messages, I'm like the Pony Express. I always get my man. See you later, Harriet.
All right, that's the first portion of Our Miss Brooks, going back to November 13th, 1949, starring Eve Arden in her signature role of Connie Brooks, Our Miss Brooks from 1949, as heard on CBS. And Lisa, this, so when I'm listening to this show, you know what I'm thinking about?
I do not.
How you never wanted to leave school. How you just wanted to be in school forever. You've told me this story.
I do like the whole school academic environment.
Yeah, she just never, I couldn't wait to get out of school. Like, I would have, like, bribed my way out of school. I wanted to get into the workforce. I wanted to start making money.
Yeah, I didn't really want to go to work.
And Lisa was just like, I'll just stay in school. That's why, you know, I'm, and
it's,
you know,
true.
What? To your credit, Lisa has two master's degrees. And I'm very,
I don't know what
I'm
good
very
it's
proud
doing
of you, Lisa.
Exactly,
I'm very proud of you that you have two master's degrees.
Well,
I want one of them.
Thank you.
I want one of those
I
master's.
I can't share that with you.
You know, you got two. I have none. Just give me one.
Yeah, you know. One. I have a lot of hats to wear, just like Mike does. We wear a lot of hats.
Yes, you
here,
do. And... Yes, you do. But, Lisa didn't want to leave school. She liked it so much.
It's true.
Like, you know.
Well, then I stayed at school, and I went to school and taught there at the same time. So
right.
It's
she
sort
just
of like a job.
Get... Mike teaches at school.
Yeah.
He teaches at Columbia.
I do indeed.
Very cool.
Audio classes.
Very, very cool.
I did a lot of teaching as well.
All right, let's
but
take...
I thought you were studying to be an astronaut.
Yes, I was.
Oh, don't get
yes.
in started.
When I was in college, I studied to be an astronaut. Yes, I took up space. All right, we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amare, and the vivacious Lisa Wolf to my right. You're always to my right. Can we... switch this
that's
around?
Because that's your better side.
Can we do a counterclockwise thing?
I would
at
be
some
out
point?
The window if I were on your left.
That's not such a bad idea. That's such a bad idea.
Let's see how that works out for us.
And we're tuning into one of the funniest radio and TV shows of all time, Our Miss Brooks. You know, when they first conceived this program, Lisa, CBS kind of created this idea. They reached out to Lucille Ball to star in this, and she was kind of busy doing some other stuff at the time. She had a radio series called My Favorite Husband on the air, and then they reached out to Shirley Booth, Hazel, on television, and they actually recorded an audition pilot episode. I have it.
I was going to say, I would love to hear
with
Shirley Booth.
I'm not sure what happened. I don't know why she did not end up doing the series. They reached out then to Eve Arden. Eve Arden was doing movies at the time. She was kind of a B-movie star, and she thought, why not, right? And she did this, and it became her biggest success. And remember her in Grease? She was the principal in Grease.
Yes. Oh, she was
fantastic.
Hilarious. That's a great role.
All right, let's get back to Our Miss Brooks. It's going back to 1949. Eve Arden, the conclusion now of Our Miss Brooks.
Pony boy, won't you be my pony boy?
Oh, Stretch, would you come here a moment?
Oh, hi, Mr. Boynton. What can I do for you?
Well, you can let me have a piece of paper, if you will. I'd like to copy down the football schedule that's on the bulletin board here.
Well, sure, Mr. Boynton. Here's a piece of this paper I don't need. Nothing wrote on it anyhow.
Oh, thanks a lot.
I'm glad to be of service. See you at the game tomorrow.
Okay, Stretch. Now, just... That's funny. There's nothing written on the front, but what's this on the back? It says, bookend of the type you admired so much at our house recently. Oh, well, it can't be very important if Stretch had it.
I don't like to bother you at home like this, Miss Brooks, but Mr. Conklin said it was important that you get this message right away.
Let's see it, Stretch.
Oh, I took the liberty of reading it on the way over. Looks like you've been degolated to get our mascot.
I've been degolated, all right. Attention, Miss Brooks. I want you to purchase at once an elephant.
Boy. What a mascot. Mr. Conklin sure went whole hog.
You went whole elephant. This must be some kind of joke. I'd better call him up and find out what it's all about. Are you sure you got this note directly from Mr. Conklin?
Sure. He handed it to me in his office as I was
walking.
Quiet, Stretch. Hello?
Be brief, please. Wasted words are wasted time. Osgood Conklin speaking.
Mr. Conklin, this is Miss Brooks.
Naturally. I was trying to take a nap. This, I might add, is the third time in 1 week you have jangled me out of my afternoon doze. Now, what is it you want?
I just got your note, Mr. Conklin, about this elephant.
As I recall, Miss Brooks, the note was quite simply written. I don't expect you to be the greatest English teacher in the world, but I do expect you to be able to read a few simple sentences in the language.
But, Mr. Conklin,
now, please do as I've asked and let me get some sleep.
But, Mr. Conklin, what kind do you want?
You've seen them before, Miss Brooks. Just get one.
But, Mr. Conklin, the money, how will I pay
it? Charge it to me. Now, for heaven's sake, ring off and don't call me back till you've got it.
Yes, sir. Stretch, we're going to need some transportation. Is your jalopy out front?
Sure, Miss Brooks. Where are we going?
We're going down to the Bombay branch of Gimbel's and charge an elephant. Thursday afternoon, Stretch's jalopy wouldn't start until it was too late to go to the circus grounds. So I made arrangements with Mr. Boynton to pick me up the following morning. Friday, I awoke bright and early and brushed my teeth extra well. I wasn't going to let any elephant's tusks outshine mine. Then I joined my landlady, Mrs. Davis, in the dinette.
Why, Connie, it's only 9 o'clock, and this is Armistice Day. There's no school. What are you doing up so early?
I'm going on an elephant hunt, Mrs. Davis.
Oh, that's nice, dear. Now, how do you want your toast? Buttered or... What did you say?
I said I'm going on an elephant hunt.
In America?
Of course.
Well, I don't want to pry into your personal life, Connie, but why?
Because Mr. Conklin wants one.
Oh, I see. Well, if you'll just drink your juice now, I'll go and... Mr. Conklin wants an elephant.
For a mascot, Mrs. Davis. I guess he's trying to outshine Jason Brill's bear cub.
Well, that should do it.
If it's any kind of an elephant at all, it should.
Where are you going to look for the beast, Connie?
Down at Moore's Meadow. Beck Brothers Circus got stuck on their way to winter quarters. Equipment trouble or something. Anyway, they might be willing to rent us one of their performing elephants for the big game.
Sounds logical. Who's driving you down, dear?
He is. I mean, Mr. Boynton. I left the door unlocked for him. Come in, Mr. Boynton.
Well, I'll get some dishes and set another place for him.
Hi, Miss Brooks.
Walter, what are you doing here?
Stretch told me all about the mascot last night, Miss Brooks. I think it's just about the most sensational idea ever, even if Mr. Conklin did get it.
Here we are.
Oh, hi, Mrs. Davis.
Hello, Mr. Boynton.
Huh? Well, it's me, Walter Denton.
Oh, of course it is. I wasn't looking. Won't you have a snack with us, dear?
Oh, sure I will. Thanks. Well, what do you think of the new setup, Mrs. Davis? The Madison Mammoths. That's what the team will be called, of course.
Mammoth?
Sure, because of the elephant mascot. You remember those prehistoric, hairy old elephants, don't you, Miss Brooks?
Not personally. Oh, that must be Mr. Boynton now. Come in!
I'll get another cup and saucer for him.
Hello, Miss Brooks. Hi, Walter.
Hello, Stretch.
Hi, pal. Pull up a chair.
Here we are.
Morning, Mrs. Davis.
Hello, Mr. Boynton.
One more strike and you're out, Mrs. Davis. It's Stretch Snodgrass.
Oh, so it is. What can I get for you, dear? Would you like an egg?
Well, I'm in training, Mrs. Davis.
Oh, I see.
I'd like 4 eggs.
Oh, and how do you want them, Stretch?
With ham and...
With ham and what?
Bacon. And if I could have some milk, too, please, and bread.
What's the sense in renting one? We're raising our own elephant, right?
I'll get you boys what you want in a jiffy. Coffee's right on the buffet, Connie.
Thanks, Mrs. Davis. Come in.
Morning, Miss Brooks. Hello, boys.
Hello, Mr. Boynton. Sit down, Mr. Boynton. Have a cup of coffee while I tell you where I want you to take me this morning.
Oh, thanks, Miss Brooks. I was rather curious about our destination.
Yes. Well, we're going to pick up an elephant together.
Oh, then we better not spend too much time sitting around and... You say an elephant?
Oh, that's right, Mr. B. Isn't it terrific?
He's going to be our mascot. Can we go with you when you get him, Miss Brooks?
Absolutely not, Stretch. The people that run the circus won't do any business with us at all if they think this is nothing but the childish scheme it is. I mean, Mr. Boynton and myself are going alone.
Well, now, just a minute, Miss Brooks. Did Mr. Conklin actually say he wanted an elephant to be our mascot?
Indubitably.
Irrevocably.
Yeah.
Well... This beats everything. I've heard of some pretty strange mascots in my time. In fact, when I was coaching at State Normal, we had a guinea pig. The little fella grew quite attached to me, too. He used to curl up in my lap all the time.
Oh, buddy, look real cute.
Matter of fact, he did. You know, most animals will lie down in your lap once they grow attached to you.
That's fine, Mr. Boynton. With a little luck, maybe our new mascot will grow attached to Mr. Conklin. Now, finish your coffee. We're off to the circus grounds.
There's nothing quite as deserted as an empty circus lot, is there, Miss Brooks?
I've always thought any empty lot was pretty deserted. This one is rather grim, though. Nothing left but a few broken-down animal cages and some rusty equipment.
Here's the administration car, Miss Brooks. Beck Brothers, private. Well, that must be the office.
Well, as they used to say before television, let's go in.
Come in.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name's Boynton, and this is Miss Brooks.
How do you do? Beck is the name. Mike Beck.
Beck is the name. Dan Beck.
You must be the Beck brothers.
Give that man a box of bazooka bubblegum. We'll come right to the point, gentlemen. You see, we're teachers at Madison High School, and our principal wants us to procure a mascot for our football team.
Sounds like a nice idea.
Very nice idea.
We furnished a mascot to Mr. Brill of Clay City High just the other day. Nice little bear it was.
Very nice little bear.
Thank you, little Sir Echo, but I...
Of course, most of our animals, as well as the performers and circus personnel, have already been trained for winter quarters in Florida.
But you do have some animals still on the grounds, don't you?
Well, what kind did you want?
We want an elephant.
An elephant?
But we just have one elephant left.
To some people, that seems like a lot.
Would you be willing to rent it out for a while?
Rent it out? Well, frankly, we never thought about doing anything like that.
No, we never thought of doing anything like that.
We'd take very good care of the animal.
Very good care of the animal. Now, I'm doing it. Look, your season is over, and you don't need the elephant to perform today.
Oh, Freddy couldn't perform today anyway.
Freddy?
Yes. Yes, that's why we kept him behind with us. He met with a little accident a few weeks ago.
Yeah. We might as well tell him the truth, Dan. You see, folks, Freddy backed into the lion's cage and, well, he sort of had his tail bitten off.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yes, now he can't make a circle with the other elephants. But he's perfectly all right in every other way.
Make a fine mascot for your team, Miss Brooks. And we wouldn't charge any rental fee at all.
Well, the price is certainly right. But why are you doing this?
Well, to save money on the elephant's feed bill.
He's a good eater, Freddy is.
I'll bet he eats like a horse.
But, Mr. Beck, how do we get Freddy into town?
And when do you want him back?
Just walk him in behind your car.
And we'd like him back next April.
Next April?
Provided, of course, that you promise to take good care of him. You see, we're leaving tonight.
Well, but we just wanted a mascot for the Clay City game.
Wait a minute, Mr. Boynton. Maybe Mr. Conklin would keep him for the rest of the season. Freddy could be mascot for other things besides football.
But, Miss Brooks, an elephant.
Could I use your phone, please?
Certainly, right here.
Thanks. We'll leave it up to Mr. Conklin. It was his idea in the first place, and...
Hello? Miss Brooks, I presume.
How did you know, Mr. Conklin?
I was taking my afternoon nap.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Conklin, but about the elephant.
Didn't you get that elephant yet?
I'm about to get it right now, sir, but, well, you'll have to keep this one longer
I promise you, Miss Brooks, my wife will be very careful of this one. Now, I'd like to get back to sleep, if you don't mind. The kids in this neighborhood have kept me up half the day already.
Yes, sir. Oh, Mr. Conklin, before you hang up, where shall I bring it?
Bring it? Bring it to my house, of course. Now, goodbye.
Goodbye. Mr. Beck.
Yes?
Got a hunk of rope?
Well... Here's Mr. Conklin's house, Miss Brooks.
Good. You better tie Freddy up to the front porch, and I'll go in and tell him we're here. Better take him over the side so he doesn't tie up traffic.
All right, Miss Brooks. Come on, Freddy. This way, Freddy.
Go on, Freddy. Down the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play, and the dawn comes up like thunder.
Let's have the rest of the concert indoors, shall we?
Sorry, Mr. Conklin.
Step into the living room, please.
Of course.
Now then, Miss Brooks, did you bring it?
Yes, sir. It's right outside.
Outside? Why didn't you bring it in?
Look, Mr. Conklin, I know you've been rather harassed recently, but we've got to get a few things settled immediately. First of all, where are you going to keep it?
Right next to those books on the piano.
Huh?
Osgood, I'm afraid I... Oh, hello, Miss Brooks.
Hello, Mrs. Conklin.
I was about to tell you, dear, that I have some disappointing news. There's nothing caught in that snare you set by the porch last night.
Oh, confound. I was planning to use that gopher as our mascot this afternoon.
Gopher? You want a gopher for a mascot?
What did you think I wanted, an elephant?
Reminds me, Miss Brooks, did you pick up the elephant bookend that we wanted replaced?
Elephant bookend?
You received my note yesterday, didn't you?
Some of it. I mean, apparently there was something not quite clear, Mr. Conklin.
It was
Conklin.
perfectly clear, Miss Brooks. Well, allow me to recall it for you verbatim. It said, quote, attention, comma, Miss Brooks, dash, I want you to purchase at once an elephant bookend of the type you admired so much at our house recently, period, unquote. Well?
Oh, brother, exclamation point.
Oh, listen to those kids, Martha. If we don't move out of this neighborhood soon, my blood pressure will just...
Please, dear, calm yourself. The children are just playing.
Well, I'm going to the window and stop them.
No!
I won't have them...
I mean, you mustn't go to the window now, Mr. Conklin. Somebody might throw something, a ball or something.
But that shouting and racket has
got... Oh, it isn't really so bad. You're just overwrought.
Of course, dear. In your nervous state, you exaggerate all irritation.
What was that?
No, Mr. Conklin, you mustn't go outside.
I'm not going to be trapped in here like a rat. Come on. An elephant is tied to our house. Miss Brooks, what's the meaning of this?
Just relax, Mr. Conklin. Things will be nice and quiet in a few minutes. Freddy is moving us to a dead-end street.
And now, once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, Mr. Conklin stormed off to the football game after warning us not to bring Freddy near the stadium. This left just a cozy little group consisting of Freddy, myself, and a rather haggard-looking Mr. Boynton.
Well, this is terrible, Miss Brooks. With Mr. Conklin refusing to accept any responsibility in this matter, we're in something of a predicament.
How do you mean, Mr. Boynton? We'll just take Freddy back to the Beck brothers.
You forget, Miss Brooks. By now, they're on their way to their winter quarters in Florida. Where in the world is Freddy going to sleep tonight?
Maybe we could get him a room at the Y.
Please, Miss Brooks, be serious.
All right. How big is your place?
But this pachyderm has to be fed and sheltered.
Calm down, Mr. Boynton. I think I have the solution. We'll simply return Freddy to his winter quarters.
Oh, but, Miss Brooks, who can afford a train ticket for a creature this size?
Train ticket, nothing. We'll just point him south and give him a shove. An elephant never forgets.
Next week, tune into another Our Miss Brooks show brought to you by Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair and Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, directed by Al Lewis, with music by Wilbur Hatch. Be with us again next week at this same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamond speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
All right, that's the one and only Our Miss Brooks, Lisa Wolf, for November 13th, 1949, a new mascot for Madison High, starring Eve Arden, as heard on CBS. Let's take a quick break, then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, we're in our second hour here, Lisa. It is Monday morning now because it's 7 minutes after midnight on our 50th show, and we have classic radio shows for you every single Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning. We're like the weekend late night anchors here, I think.
Late night, it's like late night, the Tonight Show.
I'm an anchor on you, weighing you down,
yes,
and
you
you're an anchor on me, weighing me down.
I weigh you nothing.
But I weigh more than you, so that means I'm going to weigh you down faster.
You weigh way more than
way more.
Way.
All right, so all your favorite classic radio shows, we have them here. We have Westerns, we have comedies, detectives, mysteries, sci-fi shows, dramas. You name it, we have it here on the WGN Radio Theater. We have a website, which is WGNRadioTheater.com. We have a Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and then search us at WGN Radio Theater. We have a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we have stuff.
And we got a lot of radio shows.
We got a lot of junk.
We've got we have almost 100,000 radio shows. You know that, Lisa? 100,000 radio shows.
Well, I know I've categorized all of them.
Yeah, I know. We'll never repeat any because we have so many. And we play everybody's favorites. And in this hour, we're going to tune into Orson Welles starring in The Black Museum. And then in our third hour this morning, it's Luke Slaughter of Tombstone, Good Western Adventure. And in a few minutes, we're going to play a short Bob and Ray clip because Bob Elliott, one half of the dynamic team of Bob and Ray, passed away this week at the age of 92. But first, it's our sponsor segment.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This Oscar-winning actor portrays a man who finds himself trapped in the body of his family's cat.
Oh.
Yep, in the upcoming comedy called Nine Lives.
Very cool. All right, so you can win two tickets to the auto show, plus two tickets to see...
Jeeves at Sea, which is at First Folio Theater in Oak Brook.
All right, and Jim McCants is the star.
Yes, he is playing
Jeeves. Our good
Jeeves.
Buddy Jim McCants. He's in a lot of Twilight Zones, a lot of our Twilight Zone radio shows. Okay, so the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This Academy Award-winning actor played villain Lex Luthor in 2006 Superman Returns.
You're not seeing the big picture here, Miss Lane. Let me enlarge it for you.
All right, call us if you know who that actor is, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this short break.
We are back for our 50th show of the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
You're not seeing the big picture here, Miss Lane. Let me enlarge it for you.
Let's talk to Mike from Hoffman Estates. Hey, Mike.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Couldn't be better.
Good. Well, tell me who that great voice is, that great actor.
The great actor, Kevin Spacey.
He is a great actor, and you are right. Carl and I were just talking about him in American Beauty, which is one of my favorite roles of his.
You know who's even better than him in American Beauty? Mina Suvari.
Oh. I know you too well,
oh,
Carl.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, Mike, you are a double winner tonight. You have won two tickets to the Chicago Auto Show, which is running February 13th to the 21st at McCormick Place, courtesy of Fifth Third Bank, the exclusive bank of the show, and two tickets to the Chicago premiere of the comedy called Jeeves at Sea. It's playing through February 28th at First Folio Theater, which is located in Oak Brook. And you can see our good friend Jim McCants, who's playing Jeeves. He's a very talented actor. Hope you'll love the show.
Well, I appreciate it. And don't forget John Doe, Kevin Spacey's John Doe. Seven, huh?
Oh, yes, yeah, exactly right. Yeah, he's this guy's everywhere. He's
right. Plus House of Cards.
House of Cards.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, very cool. All
thanks
right.
Thanks a lot. Well,
thanks
for
listening,
Mike.
We're going to tune into this episode of the Black Museum in just a few minutes, but let's pay a little homage to a terrific comedian. He was half of the duo of Bob and Ray. Bob Elliott passed away at the age of 92 this week. And he, of course, is the father of comedian actor Chris Elliott. And he was, for many, many years, part of a duo called Bob and Ray. And here's a just a few-minute clip with Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding.
How do you do, everybody? This is Ray Goulding here at Cheaper's Discount Store. We're going to talk to the announcer who tells the people in the store from time to time of bargains at certain locations. Interestingly enough, sir, you have a name of a famous announcer, Hugh Downs. I wonder, are you any relation to...
No relation whatsoever, Ray.
You're just another Hugh Downs, huh?
That's right.
Wonderful.
Can't have too many of them.
Hugh, tell me, how did you break into the discount department store announcing business?
Well, I began on a small station in Iowa. Then drifted off into the newspaper game for a while.
Did you ever
then
work
became
in...
became a rapper here at Cheapers.
Uh-huh.
And have worked my way up to the announcing chores.
Now, I might describe where we're located.
Would
first
you wait
floor.
Just 1 minute, Ray? Well, I see the floor manager is signaling me to go on the air, so if you just be quiet.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Attention, Cheapers customers, there's a sale right now in the record department. You can get the new album, The Many Moods of Ben Grauer, regularly $3.98, now 76 cents.
Now we can talk about there.
Hugh, I might mention that it's a very good reaction to that announcement.
Yes,
we're
yes.
in a glass booth so that we can see the entire store.
Some
now,
of the sound is probably feeding through. They really went for that album.
You get a signal when to go on the PA system here in the store from the floor manager.
Much
is that
in
right?
the manner of a TV show, Ray. I keep my eye on him, and he decides when they... Oh, there he's signaling me again.
Now,
that's,
I see he
my
held
next
up two
item.
Fingers. You go to number two on your
hardware
list.
Hardware department.
Right.
Stand by.
Attention, Cheapers customers. In the hardware department right now, a pound of three-penny nails, regularly 50 cents, now 37 cents.
Sounds like a work in a food store or a department store?
Only as a wrapper here at Cheapers, Ray,
uh-huh.
as I said.
You,
oh, wait a minute. You're signaling me again.
Attention, ladies and gentlemen, in the food department, right now for the next half hour, a sale on imitation anchovy paste. 3 cans for $1.05. It looks like anchovies, tastes like anchovies, but doesn't smell like anchovies.
The anchovy paste is
that's a good reaction. Yes, it is.
I see. You didn't mention ladies' footwear. Now, I noticed that's next on your list, is it? Or...
Ladies' footwear featuring the wedgies.
I don't want to tell you how to run your business, but do I see the floor director signaling you?
No, he's scratching his ear there.
Sorry. Well, now, Hugh, to get back to you, what is your future? Where do you go from
Ray,
here?
Ray, I hope
what
that
is,
someone will catch me here and... give me my big break. I mean, I'm here in big town at last, and I'm doing what I like to do best, announce. Wait a minute, the wedgie announcement.
Attention, Cheapers customers, and you ladies in the footwear department will find fascinating wedgies now. 2 pair for $3.45.
I see the time is just about up. We've been talking to you from Cheapers Department Store, Discount Department Store announcer Hugh Downs. Now, before we return it, I wonder, Hugh, if you would give us the famous signature that you wind up all your
yes.
day's broadcasting activities.
The one I used back in Iowa that I began way back then. Folks, until next time, keep your nose clean so you can smell a phony.
I do it.
Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding there. Bob and Ray. And, of course, Bob Elliott passed away this week at the age of 92. Terrific, terrific actor and comedian. Okay, Lisa, it's time for the Black Museum. A good mystery. And Orson Welles was living in London at the time, and big radio producer Harry Allen Towers approached him and said, "Hey, I've got an idea for a radio series. Love you to host it. And it's called The Black Museum. And you'll walk through the Black Museum and pick up an artifact, and you'll talk about it and talk about the crime that it was involved in, and then we'll dramatize it." Great idea, right?
Right.
And it was a very popular show. It came to U.S. radio on the Mutual Network in 1952. So we have an episode for you now going back to 1952. It's called The Canvas Bag. Here's Orson Welles in part one of The Black Museum.
This is Orson Welles speaking from London. Here in the grim stone structure in the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of souvenirs. A warehouse where everyday objects, a hammer, a suitcase, a shirt button, all are touched by murder. You take this canvas bag.
This canvas bag might give us a lead, sir.
What's that writing on it, Sergeant?
It's the name of a local merchant, J. Gregory, Northampton.
Well, today that canvas bag can be seen in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum.
Here we are in the Black Museum, Scotland Yard's Museum of Murder. As here lies death. All the ways and means of death. Guns, of course, abound in plenty, but there are other simpler objects, things that were never meant for murder. Now, this gold trophy, a famous sportsman climaxed a great career by winning this. Later, it was an exhibit in his trial. It was proved he had used it to batter a man to death. Here's a knitting needle, perhaps used to knit for absent friends, for children not yet born. And it was put to more lethal use, to end a life. Ah, here we are. Here's the canvas bag. It was once a bag used to hold provisions in a Northampton grocery store. Later on, it became more famous, but we anticipate. Let's begin the story not with the canvas bag, but with a certain young woman who, at her home in Birmingham, was packing her suitcases.
Here's another dress, Mary.
Oh, thanks, Mother.
And your slippers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that must be all.
Let's just have another look round. You don't want to forget anything.
No, that's right.
Oh, here you are, just as well I looked. Some stockings.
Oh. Well, I think that's all.
Yes.
I'll just lock my suitcase.
Mary?
What, Mother?
Are you sure you'll be all right?
No, of course.
It seems such a strange arrangement, you going all the way to London alone.
But what's strange about it? Tom's working in London, saving for our passages to Canada. He can't come to fetch me.
But travel all that way alone. Oh, Mary, let me come with you.
No, Mother. I'm not a child.
You're an almost married woman, but that doesn't mean your mother still can't worry about you.
Oh, Mother, really? Look, I'll be perfectly all right. Tom and I are getting married when I reach London. A month later, we'll be on our way to Canada.
And we'll lose you. It's so sad. You write as soon as you reach London, won't you, darling?
Yes, of course I will. And don't worry, please. I'll be all right.
A girl leaving home to get married, an anxious mother. Nothing very new about that. Except that the girl never went to London. The following day, her train arrived in Northampton, where she was tenderly greeted by a charming man some years older than herself.
Hello. Hello. What? Here I am, Mary. Oh. My dear Mary.
Oh, darling. I've been waiting here for a moment. I thought you...
What, that I might have deserted you? Hardly, my sweet. Did you have much trouble with your family?
Yes, a little. Dad was anxious, and you know what Mother is. She worries terribly.
Yes. You told them the story about meeting Tom in London.
Uh-huh. And they believed it.
Oh, good.
Oh, darling, it's wonderful to be with you.
Come, Mary. I found lodgings in St. John's Street.
Oh, good.
But listen, since you've told your parents you were meeting Tom Reynolds in London, we might as well continue the deception, eh?
How?
Well, to the landlady, you'll be Mrs. Reynolds. And I, of course, shall be Mr. Reynolds. It might be better if you called me Tom.
The landlady found Mr. and Mrs. Reynolds a charming couple, so devoted, so very much in love.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm Mr. Reynolds. I wrote to you about a room.
Oh, yes, Mr. Reynolds. I was expecting you today, just like you said in the letter.
And this is my wife, Mary.
Pleased to meet you, Mrs. Reynolds. I expect you'd like to see the room right away.
Yes, I would.
Well, if you'll just follow me, there's only one flight of stairs.
Let me carry the bag, dear. It's too heavy for you.
All right.
Have you any idea how long you'll be staying, Mr. Reynolds?
Well, I can't tell you at the moment. It depends on circumstances, doesn't it, sweetheart?
Ah. Yes, dear.
Why, it's Mr. Reynolds. I didn't know it was so late.
Well, my wife's asleep, Mrs. Marsh. I thought I'd just pop in to tell you that we're leaving next week.
Leaving?
Uh-huh.
Well, isn't that rather unexpected? I was talking to Mrs. Reynolds only yesterday, and she said...
Yes,
she...
but you see, I've had some news from friends of mine in Canada.
In Canada?
Yes. We're going to Canada, Mrs. Marsh.
Oh?
We're leaving from Liverpool next week.
Oh, that will be nice for you, Mr. Reynolds, and for your sweet wife, too.
Yes. Oh, but there is one other thing.
Huh?
I'd be very glad if you wouldn't say anything of this to my wife. You see, she's not quite sure that she really wants to go to Canada, and, well, I think it'll only upset her if anyone talks to her about it.
Oh, of course. I wouldn't breathe a word, particularly since you've asked me not to.
Thank you so much, Mrs. Marsh. We'll be giving up our room on Friday. I'll arrange for a car to call for the luggage early in the day.
So considerate, the landlady thought. Such a gentleman. On Friday morning, she said goodbye to the couple with reluctance. At least she said goodbye to Mr. Reynolds, who explained that his wife had gone ahead to the railway station. But even the nicest of lodgers are only a passing memory in a landlady's mind, and she might never have thought of the young couple again if it hadn't been for the events that occurred some weeks afterwards. On the high road from Rugby to Northampton, two men were walking home after work.
Well, Bert, what do you think of the team's chances on Saturday?
They want to be better than last week, eh, Sam?
Yeah, I should say so. Hey, look down there in the ditch beside the road. What do you see?
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, it looks like a canvas bag.
Ah, well, there's something inside it. Ah, well, what's that all over it? Lamb, ain't it?
Oh, probably a dead dog. Come on, I'll buy you a pint.
Hey, ain't no dead dog. Bert, look, will you? An arm. I can see it plain.
Oh, crikey. Come on, Sam.
Huh?
This is for the police. Yeah.
Crikey, Lisa, this is for the police.
Oh, that's...
Crikey.
That's good, Carl.
He said crikey. Who says crikey? I don't know. But they do on this show, Black Museum, with Orson Welles. We'll get back to the canvas bag in just a few minutes. All right, we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. Lisa Wolf is my co-host, Mike Costello, my executive producer, and Dan Long, the best in the business, in the booth there, our producer. And Kit Clem is here, too. He's watching out over us. He's a big boy. We don't want to mess with Kit.
No, we don't. Uh-uh. He's got, he'll beat us down.
He's a big boy?
He's a big boy.
What do you mean by that?
He's big muscles, you know. I don't mess with anybody with muscles that big. I mean, Dan Long, he works out. I don't mess with Dan. I call him sir. I come in here, hey, Dan, sir, how are
we
you?
We all call him sir. He's pretty intimidating.
Mike is, he's in shape, but, you know, you're not a weightlifter. I steer clear of the weightlifters. Like you, Lisa, I steer clear of you.
Yeah.
You got big muscles.
Kit, yeah. And me and Dan, we're all kind of the same.
Yeah.
About the same.
All right. So Orson Welles had big muscles. He had some big muscles. And he was the star of the Black Museum, and we're listening to the Canvas Bag. Let's get right back to it now, the Black Museum.
The local police recovered the body, and Scotland Yard was summoned. Inspector Courtney, accompanied by Detective Sergeant Finlay, arrived in Northampton. They met the doctor who had conducted the postmortem.
The body was that of a woman, Inspector.
Have you any idea of her age, Doctor?
Youngish. I'd say in her 20s. In height, a little over 5 feet. Slight build.
And in what state was the body?
Dismembered and partially decomposed.
And the cause of death, have you any idea about that?
There's no way of telling, Inspector. The only thing you can take for granted is that she was murdered.
The yard men had a dual task there. They had to track down the murderer, but first and foremost, they had to find out who had been murdered. They set out to examine the evidence.
This canvas bag might give us a lead, sir.
Yes. Now, what's that writing on it, Sergeant?
It's the name of a local merchant, J. Gregory, Northampton.
Yes, the name's clear enough. Luckily, the lime didn't rot it away.
As I'd say it was meant to, sir.
Yes, I'd say so too, Sergeant. I think we'll call on Mr. Gregory.
Was this a lucky break early in a difficult case? It seemed not. For when the London detectives interviewed J. Gregory in his Northampton warehouse, the merchant could give them little help.
Yes, it's my bag, all right, Inspector. No mistaking that, but how did it get in there?
Well, we thought you might be able to tell us that.
Well, I assure you I can't. These canvas bags are used for transporting groceries between this warehouse and my several shops in the town.
And they're, handled by your employees?
Yes.
Are they ever given out to the public?
Oh, no, they're not.
Were you aware that one was missing?
Well, hardly, Inspector. I have upwards of 100 of these bags and a lot more to do than count them.
Yes, yes, of course, yes. But now, you understand the gravity of this situation.
Yes.
A woman has been found dead. Murdered.
Murdered?
Her body wrapped in one of your bags.
Inspector, I can only assure you I know nothing whatever about it.
At this stage, Mr. Gregory, not knowing the identity of the murdered woman, the bag is our only clue. Now, you do appreciate that.
Yes, yes, of course.
Sir, that I'd like to talk to one of your employees who might have handled these bags and who might have been in the position to take one or even give one to somebody else.
Inspector, I'll see to it my staff are available
Thanks.
For you. As a matter of fact, you can begin with my warehouse manager, my own brother.
Oh, yes, thank you, yes.
Wait, I'll get him. George?
Huh?
George, come here, will you?
Presently, the obliging Mr. Gregory returned with his brother, the warehouse manager. He, too, was courteous and polite to the detectives, and only too ready to answer the questions they asked him.
Now, where do you live, Mr. Gregory?
In Birmingham. 7 High Street, Birmingham.
And are you married?
Yes. Wife and 2 children.
And you live at home?
Well, sometimes I stay here at the warehouse. You know, because of the distance involved in travel, you understand?
Oh, yes, perfectly, perfectly. Now, tell me, have you ever lent or given anyone outside the firm one of these canvas bags?
Well, I don't like to mention it, but...
Well, go on, George. Tell the inspector whatever he wants to know. Did you give away one of these bags?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I did, John. I know it was against regulations, but... Well, a tramp came in one day asking for some scraps of food and...
Yes, and...
Well, I felt sorry for him. You know how it is.
Yes, quite.
I gave him a couple of tins and a canvas bag to carry them in. Sorry, John, but that was the only occasion I have given one away.
Now, Could you tell me how long ago would this have been?
Oh, well, I suppose about 6 weeks. Perhaps a bit longer. I'm afraid I can't remember the exact date.
Well, thanks very much, Mr. Gregory. I don't suppose you can help us in this matter of the murdered woman. I mean, you've no idea who it might be.
None whatsoever, Inspector. I'm sorry.
Well, thank you very much indeed, gentlemen. Good day to you. Good day.
The inspector left the warehouse deeply disappointed. It seems that the trail led nowhere. For the inspector believed this story of the tramp that George Gregory had told him. There's no reason why he should not have believed it. But today, evidence that proved the lie can be seen in the Black Museum. There are hundreds of women reported missing every year throughout England. Now to the local police stations throughout the land, the messages went out in a long and slow search to find the identity of the murdered woman.
Desire information on any woman reported missing within past 2 months. Special attention to young woman about 5 feet in height, of slight build, well-dressed.
In answer to your inquiry, we've checked all missing persons approximating to the description given in the Glasgow area during the last 2 months. There are 3 missing persons whose descriptions might fit the one given, and further investigation is being made in each case. I shall report further within the next 7 days.
Hello, sir. This is Scotland Yard. We've been looking into your inquiry, and we find that in the London area there are 27 cases of missing persons. That would seem to justify investigation in relation to your inquiry. From preliminary inquiries, 13 of these cases can already be discounted. On the remainder, further inquiries are still being made. We'll be in touch with you later, sir. Goodbye.
Reports came flooding into Scotland Yard. The leads faithfully followed. Dead ends, all of them. The investigation into murder was bogged down because nobody knew who had been murdered.
Here's another one, Inspector. People by the name of Wilson in Birmingham. Worried about their daughter.
Oh, I never knew there were so many youngsters who run away from home. Well, still, have it checked, Sergeant.
Right, sir.
Another patient inquiry begins. When did your daughter leave home? Where was she going? Have you heard from her? The questions were asked, the answers were written down, and the result was sent to Scotland Yard.
Wilson, yes. Number 9 High Street, Birmingham. Left for London to marry a young man named Tom Reynolds.
Seems like she didn't get there, sir.
Yeah. Family had a letter from Reynolds, just a sort of friendly note, no mention of the girl.
I understand young Reynolds went to Canada, sir. He was once engaged to the girl, but they broke it off.
Oh, yes.
The next thing, when he was in London, the girl had a letter from him asking her to marry him and go out to Canada.
Yes, but did the family see the letter?
No. It was all pretty hurried. They were upset, but she seemed to be able to get her own way.
Oh, I've heard this kind of thing before. Now, I wonder who the man was.
Not Tom Reynolds, that's certain. His letter to the family is enclosed there, sir.
Oh, let's see it, will you? Yes, wait a minute. Now, rough. Crossing, how is everyone? Miss me old neighbors. No. He doesn't mention her. Now, what was her name?
Mary, sir.
Mary Wilson. Mm-hmm. 9 High Street, Birmingham. Sergeant, that seems familiar.
To me too, sir. I can't quite place it,
though. Wait a minute, I've got it.
What, Inspector?
George Gregory, that warehouse manager. His address is 7 High Street, Birmingham.
Number 7? Well, that means he lives next door.
Patience had paid off again. Careful and painstaking methods had given them a new lead, or rather, the renewal of an old lead. For the canvas bag had first led them to the Gregory warehouse. The detectives went back to Northampton, back to interview George Gregory.
Mary Wilson, Inspector? Well, of course I knew Mary Wilson.
Now, tell me, when did you last see her, Mr. Gregory?
Oh, some time ago. She went to Canada, you know. She married a young chap named Reynolds.
Yes, but did she marry him?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, she did.
You said I knew Mary Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Why the past tense?
I don't know. Well, don't you always use the past tense when you're not likely to see a person again?
Oh, you don't think you'll see her again?
Well, Inspector, with her married and living in Canada, that'd hardly be likely, Inspector.
George Gregory seemed at ease. His answers rang true. It could be nothing but a strange coincidence. Inspector Courtney gave certain instructions.
I want a cable sent to Tom Reynolds in Canada. Find out if he married Mary Wilson or not. The odds are he's still single.
Then Courtney went to Birmingham, to number 9 High Street, where he talked to Mary's mother.
I don't want to alarm you, Mrs. Wilson, but I'm from Scotland Yard, and I want to make certain inquiries.
Scotland Yard? Oh, my Mary's done nothing wrong, has she?
Of course not, no, no. Now, tell me, Mrs. Wilson, do you really think your daughter might have gone to Canada with her young man?
Oh, I don't know what to think, sir. I was always puzzled. I mean the way she seemed to patch things up with Tom.
Yes, did you question that?
No, I didn't say much. I was glad, really.
About her marrying the young man?
Yes. Well, you see, for a while I was worried. There was another man she seemed to like, but too much, if you know what I mean.
Oh, you disapproved.
Oh, Mary was never one to take criticism, but I didn't like it, I can tell you.
Was the other man older?
He was, old enough to know better. Him with a wife and 2 children of his own. I tell you, I was relieved when I thought Mary was going away to marry Tom Reynolds.
Now, there's one more question I must ask you, ma'am.
Yes, Inspector?
The name of this attentive gentleman.
Well, I don't like to make anything of it.
I'd like to know his name.
Well, he happens to live next door, and his name is George Gregory.
We've had a reply to your Canada cable, sir.
Okay, Sergeant, go ahead and read it.
Tom Reynolds is living in Ottawa. He's a bachelor. Last time he saw Mary Wilson was in Birmingham, 3 months ago.
What about his letter from London?
There was no letter from London.
It was beginning to add up. Point by link, a chain of circumstantial evidence was being forged. Forged by the patient police.
I think he's our man, Sergeant.
And imagine it, sir. He's been here under our noses since the very first clue you picked up.
Yes, the canvas bag. Let us write to him. But we haven't tied it up yet.
What's the next move, sir?
Mary Wilson left for London to meet Reynolds.
Oh, so it seems she told her parents.
Yes, it seems more than likely, sir, that they came here. So they must have lived somewhere, she and the man she met.
Now the detectives went through the town, front streets and back streets, fashionable hotels and cheap boarding houses. They went wherever there was a sign, rooms to let.
Well?
We're from Scotland Yard, ma'am. We're inquiring about a young couple who might have stayed here some 6 weeks to 2 months ago.
No, not here. I only take regulars. Had all my boarders for the past 12 months.
Thank you, ma'am. Sorry to have troubled you.
They ran the whole gamut of landladies. The suspicious landladies, the mean, the garrulous landladies, the kind, the generous, the curious. Then in a lodging house in St. John Street, their work paid off.
A young couple? Yes, I've had a few. What was their name?
We're not sure what name they might have been using.
Oh, you mean Crooks. Well, let me see. Oh, it couldn't have been that nice young couple, Mr. and Mrs. Reynolds. Now,
was their name?
Reynolds.
Tom Reynolds?
Yes, I believe it was. Such a nice man. Oh, and his young wife was named Mary. She was awfully sweet.
Mrs. Marsh, can you give me a description of Mary Reynolds?
Why, yes, I think so. Short, about 5 feet tall, brown hair, rather pretty.
Yes.
Not much help, I'm afraid. I can't remember any other details.
Oh, you helped a lot, thanks. And the man?
Tall, dark hair, and a small mole on his left cheek, older than her. Oh, but he was very nice indeed. Oh, surely they couldn't have done anything wrong.
Mrs. Marsh, can you, I want to attend the police station tomorrow morning at 10?
Me? Why, sir?
Well, we'll be having an identification parade at 10 sharp.
All right, quiet, everyone. I've got together a group of 8 people, Inspector.
Thank you, Sergeant. Mrs. Marsh, I want you to try and identify the man you knew as Tom Reynolds.
All right, Inspector, but really, I know we and his wife went to Canada.
Nevertheless, if you don't mind, just walk slowly down the line and examine each man.
Eight men. A couple of detectives, 2 men taken out of the cells, 1 recruited off the street, and in the middle of them, a protesting, indignant George Gregory.
It's not this man. Nor this. No, not him either. Why, Mr. Reynolds!
Gregory! Grab him, man! Oh. I got him! Oh.
There were enough policemen present to overpower the hastily departing Mr. Gregory, who was immediately arrested on a charge of having murdered Mary Wilson. Today, the evidence that brought about his downfall, the canvas bag that first directed police attention to him, occupies a place of honor in the Black Museum. George Gregory killed the woman, he said, because she was too much in love with him to let him go. But he couldn't afford the scandal that might arise if he continued his association with her. Not a very nice reason, but then, the reason for murder seldom are. Anyway, George Gregory was tried and convicted and paid for his crime one morning at 8 o'clock. And now, until we meet next time in this same place for another story about the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
I remain obediently yours, Lisa.
I was just thinking, I wish somebody would say that to me.
I just did.
Yeah, and say it.
You were
like,
thinking
mean it,
and then I said it.
Say it and mean it.
That's Orson Welles. That was his signature sign-off on this show. I remain obediently yours. You know? Eh, it sounded just like him, didn't it?
Yeah.
Had perfect impersonation.
You actually kind of sound like Orson Welles. Your voice is deep like
Hang
that.
Hang on, I'll try it again. I remain obediently yours.
Maybe a couple octaves lower.
No, I can't.
I know.
That's The Canvas Bag, starring Orson Welles. It was broadcast on the BBC originally, but then we had it on Mutual here from 1952. Good mystery. And we have more of those at our website, Hollywood. Let's see. The website is WGN Radio Theater, but then you go to the Hollywood 360 website. If you go there, you will click store. If you click store, you're going to see all kinds of CDs and DVDs, all kinds of fun stuff. Lisa puts it all up there.
Yeah,
right?
It's all up there if you have any
questions.
Because
Lisa does everything.
You know, check out Mike. We don't really need Mike for much.
Mike and I,
Carl,
and Dan,
nah.
We do nothing.
Dan I need. But other than that,
she picks
good.
5 packs that she puts up there every month.
Yeah.
You know, 5
Lisa
new packs.
Lisa does it all.
Yeah.
I sleep the whole week, and Lisa just does it. So
yeah,
thank
well, that's
you,
how
Lisa.
You could be up on Saturday and Sunday evenings.
Appreciate
with
it.
Us.
In our next hour, we're going to tune into an adult Western. There was a lot of Westerns on radio, but there were some good adult Westerns, and that's what we got for you in the next hour, Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. Let's pay some bills, and then we'll come back here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. It is hour 3 of the WGN Radio Theater, and Mike, could you please wake Lisa up over there. She's out.
Already taken care
She's
of.
She's out cold. Lisa Wolf.
I can't hear you.
Lisa.
I'm too sleepy.
Who's afraid of Lisa Wolf?
You could just call me Virginia.
Wake up, Lisa. It's hour 3. Still have another hour. You know, no sleeping on the job.
No, I know. You're going to dock my pay.
Yes. $1 a week divided by 2 days. So 50 cents And divide that by 3. So what is that? 18 cents or so, something like that?
50 divided by 3.
Actually, you know, I did pretty good in math, but it was just a long time ago.
Yeah, I bet.
A long, like, long time ago.
Well, of course, we use math every day, Carl.
Yes, we do.
And things like that.
Yes, we do.
And figuring how many hours until we'll be here. Now, how many hours from now until
we're
here Saturday night?
Let's think about this for a second. So 24, 23, 22, 22 hours from now.
No, till we're here next, till we're here on Saturday night.
Yeah. No, I could never figure. That's way too much. That's way too much math. Oh, boy.
22.
All right. So this is the WGN Radio Theater. We're here Saturday nights, Sunday nights, both nights, 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning on this great radio station, 720 WGN. And this signal reaches 40-plus states, plus Canada. Mike's losing a lung over there. You okay, Mike?
I'm good.
All right, good. Have a little water there, buddy. Have some water. feel better, would you? Yeah. And we are reaching. We got a call from Joe, one of our listeners, sent an email from South Carolina checking out the program, said it's coming in crystal clear. So we love it. At night, we're able to reach most of the country with this incredible radio station, WGN. And we play all your favorites, The Shadow, Jack Benny, Burns and Allen, all the golden age of radio shows. We have them here every single Saturday and Sunday night on the WGN Radio Theater. My co-host is Lisa Wolf, my executive producer, Mike Estella, and my producer in there, Dan Long. So we have an episode of Luke Slaughter of Tombstone coming up this hour, but prior to that, we have our sponsor segment, Cat's Pride. Dum, dum,
dum, dum, dum, dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
Captain America Civil War is an upcoming superhero film starring this actress who reprises her role as Black Widow.
Okay, now, if you can tell us who this celebrity is, you are going to win 2 tickets to the Chicago Auto Show.
Yes, and 2 tickets to see Jeeves at Sea, which is a First Folio Theater located in Oak Brook.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here is a hint. This very lovely actress co-starred with Joseph Gordon-Levitt in 2013's Don John.
All right, I had a few drinks the other night, so I may not have remembered telling you my first name.
All right, if you know who that actress is, call us 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are back right here on the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
All right, I had a few drinks the other night, so I may not have remembered telling you my first name.
We've got Tony on the line from Chicago. Hey, Tony.
Hey, hi.
How you doing?
Okay, real good. I really enjoy listening to the program every weekend. It's really fun.
Thank you, Tony.
He was talking to me.
Well,
thank you, Tony. We actually really enjoy airing the program for you. We really do have a lot of fun here and appreciate you listening.
Lisa has more fun than I do, though.
That's true.
Yeah, much more.
That's for sure. At least I smile. You're kind of grumpy over there.
I love it. This is like my favorite thing in the whole week to do.
That's because you get to be with me. Yeah. Okay, anyways, Tony, who is that voice?
Scarlett Johansson.
She is that voice, and she's not unattractive.
I'd date her. I definitely would. I definitely would, yeah.
And you are a winner tonight. You have won 2 tickets to the Chicago Auto Show, February 13th through the 21st at McCormick Place, courtesy of Fifth Third Bank, exclusive bank of the show. Will you enjoy that?
Yes.
And 2 tickets to Chicago premiere of the comedy called Jeeves at Sea. It's playing through February 28th at the First Folio Theater, which is located in Oak Brook. You can check them out at firstfolio.org for tickets and information.
You're not letting Tony get a word in edgewise here. Let him say something.
I want him to know what he's in for here.
Give Tony a break, would you? Let him talk.
You're the one that's interrupting our conversation.
Tony, what do you think of all those prizes?
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm really looking forward to everything.
Let us know what you think of the show, okay, and the auto show as well.
She jumped in again. She didn't let him talk.
You're jumping in. You keep cutting me off. Tony, thank you for calling. Hurry up before Carl beats us out
again.
Thanks,
Tony. Keep listening, buddy. I appreciate you. All right, Lisa.
Carl, you just can't give us a break.
Go back. Take another nap.
You just can't help it. You just got to get in every conversation.
It was great. She was out. We were like, we were doing stuff. We were
doing stuff.
Yeah,
what are
you
doing?
Were sleeping. We were putting like
you're so full of it.
We were pouring water in your mouth
so
and stuff because you snore and your mouth's wide
I
open.
Can't
when
go
you
to
snore.
Sleep here.
All righty, it's time for a good Western adventure on Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. This was an adult Western that starred Sam Buffington as Civil War cavalryman turned Arizona cattleman. He was a hard-boiled cowboy, Lisa, and he faced murderers, swindlers, cheats, and robbers. This was a show created by William N. Robeson, who also brought us Suspense, Escape, and Fort Laramie. His sidekick on this show was Wichita, played by Junius Matthews, and it came to radio for one season in 1958. It only lasted 16 episodes before Have Gun Will Travel took its time slot. So there's only 16 episodes. We have all 16, and you know what? We're playing the very first episode in the series right now. What do you think?
Am I allowed to talk now?
Yeah,
I wasn't sure if it was okay.
Yeah, just talk briefly.
Okay, I'll say every other word as
okay,
you say.
Sounds okay. Perfect. Good?
Good.
You're happy?
Yes.
First show in the series. This is from February 23rd, 1958. It stars Sam Buffington. Here's part one now of Luke Slaughter of Tombstone.
Slaughter's my name. Luke Slaughter. Cattle's my business. It's a tough business. It's a big business. I got a big stake in it. There's no man west of the Rio Grande big enough to take it from me.
Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. Luke Slaughter of Tombstone, Civil War cavalryman turned Arizona cattleman. Across the territory from Yuma to Fort Defiance, from Flagstaff to the Huachucas, and below the border through Chihuahua and Sonora, his name was respected, or feared, depending on which side of the law you were on. Man of vision, man of legend, Luke Slaughter of Tombstone.
It was a long, hot ride to Laredo. The last day I pushed it hard, eating dust all the way. I didn't know if I'd be in time or not. When I rode up to the cantina in town and went inside, I saw I was. Barely in time. The two of them were sitting at a corner table. From the sound of it, the deal was just about closed.
Trouble's over, Wilkins. Me and my boys will bring that herd up across the border for you in good shape.
Hell, I hope so, Hancock. The association's pretty worried about all the trouble we've had on these drives before.
Excuse me, gents. You Ben Wilkins?
Why, yes.
President of the Cattlemen's Association?
Yes, that's right. I don't think I know you.
Look, mister, we're talking business.
That's why I'm here, Hancock.
How come you know my name?
Wilkins, I understand you're aiming to bring a herd of cattle up from Mexico into Texas.
Well, what's that to you?
You're missing a good bet. Why don't you drive them west, to Arizona?
Arizona?
That's right. Haven't you heard about the new mines opening up around Tombstone? Everybody and his brother's headed out there, and they all got to eat. That means a good market for beef. A lot better price than you get around here.
He's crazy, Wilkins. That's too far to drive a herd.
Hell, it's sure too dangerous anyway. Why, there's banditos, rustlers, even Indians, maybe.
I took a herd out there last month. There wasn't near enough to take care of all those beef-eating miners. I'll drive your herd out there for you, for a percentage.
Now, you just shut that big mouth of yours, mister, whoever you are. I'm the one drives Wilkins' herds, wherever they go.
Oh. Wilkins, you can't afford Jess Hancock anymore.
No,
what do you mean?
The last herd he brought across the border for you. How many did he, lose along the way?
Why, 43 head.
Could have happened to anyone. Banditos, that's what it was.
Mexican bandits, huh? Here's a bill of sale might interest you, Wilkins. Seems last week a rancher named Hollister bought 43 head in good faith. Paid for him proper. Man who sold him was Jess Hancock.
What?
That's a lie.
Take a look, Wilkins. That Hancock signature...
Sure is.
Nobody's gonna accuse me of wrestling.
Don't try it, Hancock. I can kick that gun out of your hand before you get it loose from the holster.
You just try it, Mitch.
You convinced, Hancock?
Who are you, mister?
Slaughter. Luke Slaughter.
I've heard of you, Mr. Slaughter, but I didn't know you was in these parts.
You don't have to mister me, Wilkins. Just Slaughter's good enough.
Hancock, the association's going to hear about this. If those are the same 43...
You have, got no proof.
We'll see about that. Slaughter, you said Arizona, huh?
A lot of hungry miners in Tombstone.
Bigger price, huh?
Half again as much.
Meet me back here in an hour. You got yourself a job.
I'll be here, Wilkins.
You hear me, Slaughter. I don't care what your reputation is. You ain't gonna beat me out of this. I'll stop you.
Here I am, Hancock. And now's as good a time as any. Go ahead.
Yeah, you can talk mighty tall with my gun laying there on the floor.
Oh, yeah. Your gun. There it is, Hancock. And I'm just as far from that table it's sitting on as you are. Now go ahead.
There's other ways, Slaughter. There's other ways.
Alex Slaughter, when you signed for this job, you guaranteed me 6 good trail hands. I didn't know you were just going to pick them cold out of the bar here.
That's the difference, Wilkins. If they're not good hands now, they will be by the time we get to Tombstone. I'll see to that.
Yeah, I guess you will. How many you got so far?
2 Mexican boys who know the country pretty well, and a cook.
It still leaves you 3 shy.
I'll get them.
Say, mister, your name's Slaughter?
Yeah.
Mine's Rusty. I hear you're looking for trail hands.
Maybe. You ever been to Tombstone?
Not with a herd. Didn't know anybody had.
This'll be the 2nd.
But I've been almost every place else you can take a herd, I guess. Dodge City, Cheyenne, the Panhandle, you name it.
All right, I'll take you.
You the one that's hiring, mister?
That's right. But you look a little old for the drive I've got in mind. Tombstone's a long way.
Don't worry about that, none. I'll keep up.
What's your name?
They call me Wichita.
All right, Wichita, you're on.
Got room for one more, Slaughter?
Who are you, son?
Name's Carson. Jim Carson.
You ever ridden trail before?
No, but I don't figure it'd be too tough. Besides, Slaughter, I come in handy when there's trouble.
Oh? How about when there's work?
I'll work. I need the money. I want to buy me a gun.
You already got a gun.
I want to get me another one.
All right, I'll put you on. You say your name was Jimmy?
It's not Jimmy, it's Jim. I don't like being called Jimmy.
Go get your stuff together, Jimmy.
I guess you didn't hear me, Slaughter. I said I don't like being
called... You want to come along or don't you?
I want to come.
Then get moving, Jimmy.
I don't like that one, Slaughter. He's on the prod.
Could be, Wilkins.
Why take a chance with him, then? I don't want any trouble with this herd.
Now, just a minute, Wilkins. I didn't guarantee no trouble. Matter of fact, I'd be surprised if there wasn't. I guarantee just one thing, to bring that herd through. That you can count on.
Oh, I've seen young punks like him before, Slaughter. They go around with a chip on their shoulder trying to show how tough they are. He probably heard about you.
What about me, Wichita?
Well, no offense. You've got a kind of reputation, that's all. Punk like that, sooner or later, you'll probably want to find out how tough you are.
Maybe.
I heard him shooting off his mouth at the bar earlier about how he'd gunned down a couple of men here and there.
Oh?
I bet he's awful green on the trail, though.
You can show him the ropes, Rusty. Maybe the trail will take some of the toughness out of him. Anyway, I need what men we can get. He goes with us.
You're the boss. Where are we heading from here?
Delgada. Little town below the border. That's where we pick up the herd.
When we leaving?
Soon as we saddle up.
Tonight?
Yeah. We should be able to hit the trail with the cattle tomorrow afternoon. Make a few miles toward Tombstone before dark.
Well, what's the hurry?
There's a man named Jess Hancock wouldn't mind making a little trouble for me. I want that herd all in one piece. To start with, anyway.
That's the very deep-voiced Sam Buffington starring as Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. That's the very first episode in the series called Duel on the Trail from 1958. Lisa and I and Mike and Dan will chat with you in just a minute, but first, let's pay some bills. All right, once again, a call for likes. We want to be liked. We want our listeners to please like us.
I like you, Carl.
Oh, thanks, Lisa. I like you, too. I like you, Mike, and I like you, Dan.
This is like a little love fest here.
And I like these old-time radio shows, and we're going to keep playing them. We play 6 old-time radio shows every single weekend. We're here Saturday and Sunday nights from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m., and that's what we do. And it's the most fun I have all week long. I love coming here and doing this show, Lisa. You know how excited I get. I'm like, hey, tomorrow we do the show.
Lisa calls me throughout the week
a lot of times. Man, you text and call me a lot.
I'm working and working and working and working all for Saturday and Sunday.
Four kids and a husband?
No, I just have the WGN Radio Theater.
I mean, man, she calls me a lot.
There's a lot of preparation for this show, so I've got to do everything myself.
She sends me texts. She calls me. Oh, yeah.
Well,
yay.
Nothing would get done otherwise.
But I like hearing from you.
Would it?
But I'd like to hear from you a little less.
one less time each hour.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Gotcha.
But no, seriously, we love when you like us. So if you could, we want to get to 1,400 likes by 2 o'clock in the morning. So we've got 25 more minutes to make it happen. We need our listeners to push us over the threshold of 1,400.
You know what? We should have some kind of a prize for,
that
happens.
Yeah, we'll do it. Well, yeah we'll play 6 more old-time radio shows next week.
That's a prize.
We really do want to get over 1,400, so just go to Facebook and search us, WGN Radio Theater, okay?
And you'll do a dance?
I'll do a dance.
Okay, that's a prize.
Yeah, it won't look good, but it'll look like Elaine on Seinfeld.
And I will video that dance, and I will post it.
If when you get... do that, can you come in wearing your platform shoes?
Yeah,
and, like, you
so
know.
I can twist my ankle again.
That would be great.
All right, let's get back to the very first episode of Luke Slaughter of Tombstone.
Pretty good-looking herd, Rusty.
Yeah. But no herd's worth pounding leather like we did all the way down here to Delgado.
Slaughter said he wanted to make it by this afternoon. He did.
Where is he, anyway?
Signing the papers over there at the pens.
I don't see why we can't hang around town tonight, leave in the morning.
Well, why not take it up with the boss? Here he comes.
You think you're pretty funny, don't you, Wichita?
Just once in a while, son.
Well, I guess we're all ready. Rusty, how about the cook?
Oh, he's got all the grub loaded in the chuck wagon, ready to roll.
Good.
Senor?
What?
You are Slaughter?
Yeah, who are you?
I'm Carlota. You are going to Arizona?
Yeah, Tombstone. Why?
Take me with you.
What?
I want to get away from this place. I want to go to Arizona. Please, take me with you.
Sorry.
What are you doing here, Carlotta? Come on, back to the cantina where you belong.
Well, Jess Hancock. How come you're down here?
This is my stamping ground, Slaughter. Or was. I ain't forgot.
I didn't figure you had.
First you take my job, now you try to take my girl.
Now, just a minute, Hancock. Don't get things any more twisted up than you can help.
Get moving, Carlotta.
You leave me alone. Get out!
I hope you have a real pleasant trip to Tombstone, Slaughter.
I better have...
Getting pretty dark, Slaughter. Don't you reckon we'd better get that herd bedded down for the night?
A little further.
You've been avoiding the regular trail. Expecting trouble?
I usually do, Wichita.
I've been watching you around horses, Slaughter. Been thinking you was in the cavalry.
Oh?
I heard about a man named Slaughter once. Commanded a regiment from Illinois in the war.
Yeah?
Raiders, they was. Used to raid across the line. This Slaughter I heard about, he always used to come back leading a string of Confederate horses with their saddles empty. I've been thinking you're the same Slaughter.
And I've been thinking you're a pretty nosy old man.
Yep, that's me.
Well, this is far enough. Rusty, we'll bed down here.
Right.
Wichita, that chuck wagon of ours. I just saw the tarp move. There's somebody inside.
Yeah, I saw two.
All right, Carlotta.
Oh.
Get out of there.
Please, senor, I want to go to Tombstone.
You picked the wrong way.
But you don't send him back now. It's night. It's wild country. You wouldn't do that, would you?
You counted on that, didn't you? All right, you'll go with us.
Oh, gracias.
But you'll earn your way. You'll help the cook. You'll clean up after him. You'll wash the dishes.
Work me like a horse, huh? Or worse. Maybe you like the horses better.
There's one big difference. I invited the horses. After we bedded down the herd, the cook wrestled up some grub. Carlotta was plenty sullen, but she worked. Jimmy kept eyeing her, so I figured I'd better put him on night herd. I turned in around midnight. Everything was peaceful. But it didn't stay that way very long.
Slaughter! You hear that?
Yeah. Where'd they come from?
Well, I don't know, but it's got the herd riled up. There they go! They're stampeding, Slaughter! They're stampeding!
In a moment, Luke Slaughter of Tombstone returns. Somebody ought to set Jack Benny straight about how to make a movie because he's at it again. When you join him later on today, CBS Radio's misguided matinee idol will attempt his own version of a famous movie. To make it even better, Hollywood producer Stanley Kramer, who made the movie, will be right there when he does. For a hilarious example of how not to make a motion picture, hear the Jack Benny Show later today on most of these same stations. Henry Morgan and Mitch Miller will be around following Jack Benny. Henry Morgan is host on the fast and funny guessing game, Says Who. His star-studded panel of experts spark one laugh after another as they try to identify memory-teasing mystery voices. And speaking of stars, you'll find an hour of fast and funny conversation with the biggest name stars of Hollywood and Broadway waiting for you on CBS Radio's Mitch Miller Show tonight. And now, Act Two of William N. Robeson's production of Luke Slaughter of Tombstone.
Wichita, turn him in! We gotta get him turned to melon!
You're getting too close, Slaughter!
Jimmy, Rusty, over there!
I can't turn the bunch in the lead!
Slaughter, watch out! They'll run you down!
Yeah, get around! Rusty, head off that lead steer!
Right! I got him!
Get him! Keep milling! That's it! Let's get him slow!
Whoa!
Whoa, bro! Yeah.
That was close, Wichita.
Yeah. I thought I'd seen everything, Slaughter. But I guess I was wrong.
What do you mean?
Riding into that herd the way you did.
You know a better way to turn him?
You could have been run down, killed.
Maybe. Jimmy, come on over here.
Look, Slaughter, up on the ridge.
Small fire.
Could be Indians.
We'll go up and take a look in a minute.
What do you want, Slaughter?
Those two shots that started the stampede. Sounded like they came from over near where you were. You fire those shots, Jimmy? I said, did you fire those shots?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I thought I saw something moving in the dark near me. Figured it could be trouble.
So you just hauled up and blasted away, huh? Pretty spooky with that six gun of yours, aren't you?
I tell you, I thought someone was coming at me.
You almost cost us the whole herd. You want two of those guns, but one's too much for you. I'm taking your six gun, Jimmy.
No, you ain't, Slaughter.
I'll leave you your rifle in case you run into trouble on the way to Tombstone. But I can't take any more chances on that itchy trigger finger of yours. Now hand it over.
Ain't nobody gonna take my gun away from me. I'll draw on you before I let you.
No, you won't.
Maybe you ain't heard about them two men I gunned, Slaughter.
Yeah, you were shooting off your mouth about it in a saloon, but I don't believe it, Jimmy. You never gunned a man. And you're not going to start now. Now hand it over. But first, let's have it. All right. Now get back to the herd.
Yeah, you've taken a lot away from that kid, Slaughter. First calling him Jimmy, and now taking his gun.
I had no choice.
Even so, you cut him up, and he won't forget it.
You trying to be my conscience or something, Wichita?
Oh, like you say, I'm just a nosy old man.
Then let's go nose around that fire up on the ridge. There's some dirt on that fire, Wichita. Get it out.
All right. Nobody around here. You know, this could be a signal fire. Think it was Indians that lit it?
I doubt it. I think it was intended as a signal for Jess Hancock, so he could locate the herd.
You suggesting somebody in our outfit set off the fire?
Could be.
But the stampede, we was all there.
The fire could have been lit just before the stampede.
You say somebody in the outfit, that'd include me?
Yeah. Right now, Wichita, there's only one person in the outfit I'm sure of.
Who's that?
Me.
I tell you, I didn't start the fire, Slaughter. I wouldn't help Hancock. I told you I want to get away from him.
I know that's what you told me, Carlotta.
But you don't believe me. You think I'm still Hancock's girl. Why don't you trust me? Why don't you be nice to me, huh? Maybe I could be your muchacha.
Sorry. Right now my job's riding herd on cattle, not women.
Oh, would you make me sick? You don't care about nobody but yourself.
Is she right, Slaughter?
What? Oh, Wichita. I might have known you'd be listening.
Yep.
Well, Slaughter, the herd's quieted down. Two Mexican boys are keeping an eye on it. Did Carlotta admit anything?
No.
I wouldn't trust her any.
I don't, Rusty.
You want us for anything more, or can we turn in?
In a minute. I want to lay out the plans for tomorrow. I think we're in for some trouble.
How so?
We've got two possible routes through the country ahead, Rusty. Through a narrow pass or along the river bottom. The question is, which way to take the herd?
You expecting to be dry gulched?
I wouldn't be surprised, Jimmy.
Yeah, that narrow pass would be the logical place for a bushwhacking. Why not take the herd through along the river bottom?
Well, there's one thing wrong with that, Rusty.
Hey, it could be just what Hancock wants you to do.
Right. He might be trying to outfigure me. There's a lot of willows and underbrush along that river bottom. He could be holed up there. That's why we're going to take the herd through the pass. We'll start right after sunup. I didn't know if my bluff would work or not. It was the only way I could find out who Hancock's spy was. I rode away from camp toward the herd. Whoever it was, I had to give him a chance to make a move. And it didn't take long. Pretty soon I heard muffled hooves moving away. I rode back to camp and took a look. It was Rusty. He was gone.
Carlotta's gone too, Slaughter.
I guess she wasn't so anxious to get away from Hancock as she let on.
So Rusty's going to tell him that we're bringing the herd through the pass.
It's just what I wanted him to do. Unless he knows this country a lot better than I do, he's going to lead me right to Hancock.
You're going after him?
Yeah. They should give me the slip. We're going to be in for some trouble.
What do you want us to do?
Split the outfit in two, Wichita. Take half the herd through the pass, the other half through the river bottom. Be ready for trouble, especially in the pass.
Let me take the pass, Slaughter.
You sure you want to?
Yeah, real sure. And I think I can handle it.
I think you can, too. Oh, and, you might be needing that six gun of yours. Here it is. Jim.
Thanks. Luke?
Slaughter will do. Get moving at sunup. Join up on the other side and wait for me. I picked up Rusty's trail. He was headed for the ridge between the pass and the river bottom. It was getting light when I reached a shortcut where I could gain some ground on him. But I gained too much. Just as I got back to the trail again, a horse came pounding around the bend carrying Rusty and Carlotta. He pulled up when he spotted me and shoved Carlotta off.
Get off!
Then I saw he'd been holding a gun on her. His slug burned my shirt as I dove at him.
Slaughter, you...
You all right, Carlotta?
I think so.
Rusty made me go with him. He was taking me back to Hancock. Slaughter.
It came from those rocks up above there. Take cover.
All right. Oh, I can't walk. My ankle is twisted.
All right. All right. I'll carry you. Get her up behind this rock. You'll be all right. There. Sit here. You'll be safe now.
I was wrong about you, Slaughter.
What do you mean?
You do care about somebody beside yourself. Gracias.
It's got to be Hancock up there in those rocks. Here, take my rifle and stay put. I'm going to try and circle around behind him. There was a big shoulder of rock above me and to my left. If I could get around that, I might be able to get behind Hancock if he didn't hear me coming. There he was, 20 yards away, his back to me. His gun in the holster so he could get a better handhold as he edged his way along the rocks. I holstered my own gun and stepped out into the clear. Hancock!
Slaughter.
Yeah. Here I am, Hancock. Now go ahead. Draw.
I don't like it, Wichita. Slaughter should have been here by now.
He'll be along, Jim.
Well, maybe we ought to head up there and see if we can find him. He could be in trouble.
He said wait for him here.
Well, even so, maybe...
Here
we...
he is, coming up the draw. Carlotta's with him. Ain't that Rusty's horse that she's riding?
Yeah. And Slaughter's leading another one.
Uh-huh. With an empty saddle.
Heard all right?
Yeah, all in one piece, no trouble. But looks like you had some.
A little.
That horse you're leading, is it Hancock's?
It was.
I knew you could outdraw him.
Matter of fact, the draw was about even.
But how come you...
Jim, you got a couple of things to learn. It isn't getting your gun out of your holster that's the most important thing. It's what you do with it once it's out.
You figure Hancock was after the herd or after Carlotta?
I didn't take time to ask him, Wichita.
Luke Slaughter of Tombstone, starring Sam Buffington. Written by Robert Stanley with editorial supervision by Tom Hanley and directed by William N. Robeson. Supporting Mr. Buffington in the first of this new series were Lillian Bayef, Eddie Marr, Herb Vigran, Sam Edwards, Junius Matthews, and Vic Perrin. Next week at this time, we return with...
Slaughter's the name. Luke Slaughter. When we meet up again, you can call me that. Luke Slaughter.
Lisa, next week, when we meet up again,
yes,
you can call me Carl Amari.
Carl Amari.
Carl Amari.
Got it.
All right. I don't have as deep a voice as Sam Buffington there, but... But
it's okay. We still love you anyways.
The very first episode in the Luke Slaughter of Tombstone series, Duel on the Trail, February 23rd, 1958, is heard on CBS. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. Nick DiGilio is here. Hi, Nick.
Hey.
What's going on, my friend?
Not much. Super Bowl weekend.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What did you think of that game?
I didn't really watch the game. I watched Key and Peele for about 4 hours. Key and Peele did like a live streaming commentary.
Right. They had a commercial on there. I saw that.
I watched Key and Peele for essentially 4 hours. I had the game on.
Yeah.
And then I watched commercials.
Uh-huh.
But for the most part, I spent 4 hours watching Key and Peele be geniuses.
They're hilarious.
It was essentially two of the greatest... improvisers with no net improvising for 4 hours.
And wow.
It was a joy.
Last season, they were part of Fargo. Did you see Fargo last season? They were like two detectives on it.
They are.
With Billy Bob Thornton.
Multi-talented. No. They're the best.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys are the real deal.
We got to get them on the show.
Let's
get them on the show.
Sure. That'll be easy.
Yeah, why not? They would want to be on your show and talk about what they're doing. Are you kidding?
Mm-hmm. Well, they met here. in Second City.
Yeah. Oh, well, very cool. What's on the show this morning?
Movie reviews. You mentioned Fargo. Coen Brothers have a new movie out.
Yes.
Called Hail Caesar. Mm-hmm. And Eric and Jim and I will review that. We'll review Pride and Prejudice and Zombies,
which I saw today with my daughter.
Right.